Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We are back on a Thursday. A lot happening, obviously, in the sports world, but I always get excited when I get special guests on. Jay Foreman, Old School, my man Austin on the ones and twos. To my left, it's P2. It's the Peters times two, Jason and Keaton Peters. Obviously, Jason and myself are on the board at the Lighthouse. We have a big event next Tuesday, 5 p.m. out at the North Walmart. Keaton has been to 10 of these, I bet, right, Keaton?
Probably,
yeah. Yeah. So we're going to have them on. I want you, all the listeners, obviously, we'll post it on social media where you can donate directly to the Lighthouse for the Christmas event. But Jason's here. He's on the board. Keaton's here on the board myself just to talk about the event. So welcome to Old School, finally. You're just here the other week with Bill. Now you get to come on Thursday. More relaxed.
A little more relaxed this time coming on Jay's show.
Yeah. And so... you know, the one thing I'll say is that the Lighthouse, I remember when, Eric Warfield's really originally was a big part, is a big part of it still, was started it, and he had the basketball game and everything like that. The one thing that's really cool about the Lighthouse is that you get to go over to the Lighthouse and see how it's grown and seeing how, you know, they really are able to, you know, welcome any of the kids in and obviously, you know, provide them everything that they need to be successful and then the relationships afterwards. So, and then the Christmas event, I think I went 3 years ago was my first one. And it was, you know, I'd heard about it. It's really amazing how thoughtful young people are, you know, at that time, you know, with the $100 gift card, how they're thinking about everybody else besides themselves. Because I know when I was a kid, I probably would have bought every G.I. Joe in.
Well, yeah, most of us, at least in my case, had a good upbringing, and I had parents that both a mom and dad at the house. And a lot of these young people that and students that go to the Lighthouse have broken homes.
Yeah.
A lot of them are single family homes, right, and very poor,
sure,
living environment. So what we love about this event is this event gives these kids a way of having a little holiday cheer,
right,
and maybe a Christmas they wouldn't otherwise have. I know what we do is we provide $100 for up to 100 kids. Bill Michener and Pete Allman and their staff vet the kids that get to qualify, right, to come to the event. And they start out by coming to the Lighthouse and they're provided a meal before the event. And Bill and Stacy Hooks of Slim Chickens, right, have graciously donated the meal for that event that night. So they'll eat before they come. And then Elite Party Buses of Lincoln has donated two buses that will bus the kids over to the North Walmart at 4700 North 27th Street. And at that time, Bill will line them up. There will be university athletes, yeah, of all kinds that come. A couple of years ago, we had the whole basketball team there, yeah, which is really special for the kids. Of course, they all gravitated towards Tominaga at that time.
Cause, yeah.
anyway, the athletes will then get paired with a youth or a student, and they'll take them around and they'll kind of watch over them as they pick out what items they'd like. This year, we're raising it for about 15 years now, we've been doing $100. As we all know, the cost of everything has gone up. So this year, we're raising it to $125. Hence the reason we got to raise a little more money this year to be able to provide for all the students that will be there.
Yeah, you know, like even last year, I think Emmett Johnson was there. Obviously, I know Emmett, you know, pretty well. And obviously, he was in just getting started in his, you know, I guess pre-stardom. But it was really good to see him over there. And I think Michael Booker III from the football team was over there. And I know they had some track athletes, both male and female. I liked it just because I remember, you know, taking a couple young kids around and they were calling, and one of them called their brother and tried to put together a list for what they were going to get their mom. And then they got a couple other guys that wanted to, you know, buy a couple of those, you know, like a little chain or something, you know, because I think it maybe had some winter formal coming up or something like that. So it's really cool just to see, you know, talk to them, get to know them, more importantly, you know, teaching them about taxes and all that other stuff and, you know, how you got to kind of money manage. But more importantly, just see them actually thinking about other people besides themselves, which is actually the event is for them, but it's actually for people that's, you know, extended family as well. So it's a special event. I love going over there and seeing all the kids. I love that lighthouse. It's been probably one of the best things about being on the board because it's legit. You know, it's obviously, being a former athlete, you get all these type of opportunities, and sometimes, you know, the bad ones end up in the paper and you see that. But then when you really do your research on the lighthouse, they obviously more than check the boxes of being truthful with what they do with the funds, but more importantly, what they do on a day-to-day basis. And the one thing I'd like about the lighthouse is they take everybody in and then they get them better at school or whatever they need to do. And they provide resources for them to be successful. And it's not only that, you know, teach them, they try to get them in trades and teach them about trades. Obviously the world's changing, whether it's AI or trades are just as important if that's what you want
to
do.
And to follow up on that, not to interrupt you, but the reason Bill Michener, the director of the lighthouse, was going to be here tonight, but they are having a tip meeting tonight, which is the trades and profession program that they have at the lighthouse, which is a kind of a newer over the last 2 to 3 years, program that they've started at the lighthouse. And it introduces the youth or the students over there at the lighthouse to the trades programs that are out there. And a good friend of mine, John Carpenter with IES Electric here in Lincoln, is a big part of that program. And they bring the students in to learn electrical work or plumbing work, or, you know, they just anything in the trades and profession, because a lot of them may not want to go on to college, but they can go on to in the trades and profession, which we all need. So.
Yeah, it's really good. And obviously they keep providing more and more resources for everybody that it comes through the lighthouse and want them to be successful people, you know, in and out of the lighthouse, which I think is really, really good. And also I think it's what I like to see is a different event. You see some of the older people that have kind of, I'd say, graduated through high school, they still come back to the lighthouse and participate. So we got Keaton over there. We won't put you on there. I know you're a little nervous about being on the radio. Look,
I had my son come on because he's been coming to this event, I guess at first, or when he was younger, he was kind of forced to come to it because we wanted our kids to see what reality is, that not everything's just given to you. So,
it's good. So Keaton, obviously you're older and you're in college now and you're not little Keaton anymore. Just talk about some of your memories and obviously how the impact has been on you to see, you know, obviously what the lighthouse being able to provide for some kids, but then more importantly, how it's really changed your perspective on life.
I would say, I think like the coolest thing for sure is seeing them go out of their way to get their mother, their sister, their brother, who might also be at the event with them, just different types of gifts, something that they might usually not be able to get.
Right.
I would say it's just a really cool experience now with the extra $25 and seeing what it started with and what it's became now.
Yeah, I mean, that's impactful. I mean, I remember last year, you know, I had some dibs on some candy. I was teaching about what's the good candy. You know, I was like, you got to hold off on that, man. This has a little bit too much sugar in it, man. You better be asleep by 10 o'clock. So I had to really educate them on what it really means. But it's really cool to see different relationships, actually, to be honest with you.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
One of the kids from the Lighthouse now works at Chipotle. And I was down there with Nick, and he was like, yo, you remember me? And I was like, yeah, it was pretty cool to see him. And that was from the very first time, you know, that I started coming 3 years ago. Now he's a little bit older. And he just told me what he had going on. And that's it's really enlightening to see that he obviously took what he learned and was able to experience at the Lighthouse, obviously being able to meet him. And he was so proud of what, you know, he had a, you know, full-time job and he's well on his way.
Because a lot of these kids, if they didn't have the safe haven in the Lighthouse, a lot of them probably wouldn't graduate high school, or the odds are they would have a tougher time graduating high school. That's what Bill and his staff over there really emphasize. And they don't just go to the Lighthouse and have fun. They have to go there. They have to be dedicated to their schoolwork. The staff is making sure that their schoolwork is completed before they can go on and do anything else. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, it's whether you're an athlete or, you know, just a regular student. I mean, for me to have the support system to be successful, especially in school, at an early age probably helped me out, obviously, and, you know, to get through and get to college and get through college. And so Lighthouse is doing it no different, just because they're not, you know, sports specific. You know, for me, I had to get, you know, good grades and have a good support system to get to college. They're doing the same thing. And that's what the most important thing is. You're going there. It's a place of security for them. And then, but also
safe haven,
safe haven. And then obviously hold them accountable, and that's what they want. And actually a lot of them need it. But they need it in the right environment, and they're providing it for it. And it's not just the one thing also about Lighthouse, I'll say, is that it's not just a like blanket program where like Bill Michener, I'm going to tell you this, Bill Michener is investing in that like no other. And I was,
well, he's a former Lighthouse youth.
Former Lighthouse youth. But he knows, he takes every single kid and tries to create like their own program for success. It's not just, all right, do this. Since you don't do it, you didn't work, send them back off. He really is invested in and wants every kid to have a good experience and at the Lighthouse, as long as they put in enough work as much as they do. So I think it's really, really good. And I think, you know, always having the event next Tuesday out at the North Walmart is always kind of like, you know, the pre-Christmas, but then obviously kind of the cherry on top of it, obviously a great year at the Lighthouse.
Christmas isn't Christmas unless we have the Lighthouse Christmas event.
I know. You always got to get it on there. You got to make sure. You know, you definitely, because last year, you know, even the one thing I'll say about the tickets, always supported it, and obviously our listeners as well. So when we get it out on social media, appreciate if you guys can do and dedicate or donate some. Definitely every dollar goes a long way, but the tickets always supported me being on the board at the Lighthouse, being able to leave and being out there for that event, just because it means a lot. So,
and any amount helps us out,
right?
So yeah. You can Venmo to at Lincoln Lighthouse. And you can
get on Lincoln Lighthouse .com or .org.
.org.
Lincoln Lighthouse.org, and you can go to the donate.
There's a link on there for our Christmas event at Lincoln Lighthouse.org.
Yeah, and you can put in the memo and everything. It's great, man. I mean, it's everything that Lincoln Lighthouse has done, and obviously had an impact on me as a board member, has been one of the best experiences I've had outside of, you know, whatever, you know, regular, you know, life. So I will tell you that it made a big impact on me, and I enjoy it and can't wait to get out there on Tuesday just to experience, because every year it's different. There's different kids. It's always a great event. So we're going to cut this segment a little short, give you guys, look at you guys. Hey, this is the best thing. Here's the best thing. Now we can have some fun. This dude here, let me tell you something. There's not a day that goes by in our little group chat that he doesn't mess with Jay Foreman. Keaton doesn't, because Keaton's my boy. Keaton and Layton are my boys. But now that he's in the pressure cooker, this is like, I got you right where I want you. Now, if I was a little bit petty, I'd keep you here probably to 5:30. But I'll let you off the hook just because I'm in the holiday spirit. So,
and I have to give Jay a big thanks for letting me come on here and promote our event. So thank you very much.
We need to raise about another $3,000. We'll get a big donation from, you know, the guys here at the ticket. We'll handle that. So we'll put it out there on social media. We'll mention it for the next tomorrow, and then we'll do it again on throughout the weekend, and on Monday we'll get it going, and then 5 o'clock next Tuesday, right out at Walmart,
December 16th.
Yeah,
5 o'clock.
We'll take a quick break. Come back, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Jason Peters, and Keaton Peters. We'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're back, second segment, 5 o'clock hour. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. Once again, we are brought to you by the Mercado Piedmont, certified Piedmontese, special ingredients and butcher shop. Probably one of the best butcher shops in Lincoln, if not the best. 4 locations in Lincoln and Omaha, 3 in Lincoln, actually. 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andermatt / Old Cheney, and 168th and Maple up there in the O. So we appreciate their support. I also appreciate Jason and Keaton Peters coming in and talking about the Lighthouse event. Again, December 16th, 5 p.m. It's going to be where we have 100 kids out there, and they're each going to get $100. And let them have at it out there at the North Walmart. It's a great event. So appreciate you guys getting on the Lincoln Lighthouse website and donate. And then every dollar counts because it goes to a great cause. So. Anyways, onward, upward, Austin. A lot going on in the sports world. It's always, here's the thing.
It's always something.
Here's the thing about college towns. Mm-hmm. College, it's like Lincoln. They're generally mm-hmm. small, big time, blue blood universities are generally in, you know, areas where you're only show in town. And obviously, Sharon Moore obviously had his issues, and obviously, you know, got fired. You know, for inappropriate, I guess, relationship, I guess what I think that what they said technically, you know, knowing some people up there and knowing the honest, you know, what's going on, really, to be honest with you, if they were in the college football playoffs or beat Ohio State, he's still employed. They knew about it. Now they're just trying to distance themselves. And then it tells you that they never really wanted him in the first place based on the way the contract was originally set up. Because if you go back and really think about his tenure starting last year, it was through the first quarter of the season. They haven't even really signed his contract yet.
No.
They knew what they were supposed to pay him. So they were really trying to fight him being the head coach last year. What saved him last year was the upset against Ohio State. I think the biggest upset in the game as far as Ohio State being favored by 20-something points, Michigan winning. And then obviously beating Alabama and then getting Bryce Underwood. So he had some sort of, he thought, job security. Now, did that cloud his judgment or not? I don't really know. I don't really care. That's personal business. Obviously, I think it got a little hairy when he went into a full-fledged crash out. I think also what you can't do, everybody's going to focus on Shamar Moore, and that's what University of Michigan wants, right? But what they're not really focusing on is probably the institution of chaos that they've had in the football program and their athletic department for almost a decade. Harbaugh staff, 11 of the guys they hired, 7 of them have had off the field discretions. That happens. It's human nature. 7 out of 11 is probably pretty high.
That's extremely. Let's do some quick math here. 63%.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's pretty amazing there. You know, you are a Dukester. So obviously this is going to be it. I will say this is it's an unfortunate situation because I look at it like this is where I have a problem with Michigan. Right, Sharon Moore. The relationship is not. This is not the first. It's not the last. That's really small beans. The bigger thing is the reaction afterwards. That's where he's gonna need. He has to be held accountable. Then let's move over to Michigan, right? Because I think they are at fault as well, right? So leave the rumors and all that stuff and what really happened. Just leave that over there. Let's look at Michigan. Okay. You knew about this a long time ago, all the way back in September. So you actually probably knew about it in June.
Yeah.
Okay. You brought it to their attention in September, probably most likely after that Oklahoma loss, and he was suspended. Okay. Because whatever the better time when you have time on your hands and the backup coach is going 2-0 and you lost to Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. That's how it went down.
College football playoff team, Oklahoma, in retrospect.
But you lost on the road, right? And you went, you know.
But where you're supposed to be, college football playoff.
Right. So that's when you knew it. So then the season went on. You come down to Nebraska and win. And Michigan starts to play good. you don't do anything. Now, the season goes, you lose a game out, then you end up losing, you lose the USC, and then you obviously end up losing Ohio State. Here's the problem with Michigan on top of it. Number one, now you're trying to act like, oh, you have new evidence. No, you don't.
No.
You know who the person was, the coach was, who the other person or people were, right? Let's just leave it at that. No judgment here. So you are at fault, right, at some point, because you're supposed to be a place of excellence, like they like to say, Michigan men,
right?
That's what they like to say. Mm-hmm. Then the even worse is you know dang well you had been putting feelers out for his job over the last month of the season. That's factual. Mm. Okay, I'm telling you facts here. This is not about rumors. So you've been putting feelers out for his job. You let this man recruit. You let the staff recruit. You let the kids commit and sign.
Yep.
And then you purposely waited till afterwards. You dead wrong for that.
Yeah.
So when you're and sure, business is business, but that's bad business. So now you got the kids locked in, because really, when you're thinking about it, it's even later than the Penn State thing, so it's even worse. But this is actually known to what you could have done. You could have fired him during the season, and I'll be willing to bet if you probably have the same record. You get what I'm saying?
Could. And here's the thing. If you're Michigan and you think you can go get anyone you want, either that clouds your judgment to hold on to it to when it's convenient for you, or if you're Michigan and you want to be at the front of the line because you think you deserve to be at the front of the line for hiring coaches, don't you fire your guy first? Like, hey, we haven't been necessarily impressed. We hired you for X, Y, and Z reason. Maybe we hired you to fire you. Didn't tell you that going in, but
we didn't want you. We were hopeful it worked out, and you didn't want him in the first place. He had lost it already. You could have fired him in the middle of the season when you had the projections, right? And you were kind of teeter-tottering on the line. You already have a interim coach that you could have had to finish out the season. And if you wanted to remedy that Jim Harbaugh situation with Connor Stallions, you fire the last guy that's a part of it, or the main cog in it.
Every last guy that's a part of it, including
the main guy.
The main guy.
Who had had discretions with the cell phone and then had to sit out for these two games. So that lets you know he doubled down on it. So you really could have been in good faith, but you chose, right? So this lets you know you were okay with what happened with Connor Stallings. You just mad you got caught.
And so that's where, if I'm a prospective coach looking at this Michigan job, maybe there's a guy out there, Michigan's the dream job. Screw it. I'm going to run it with integrity in class. But for those guys that could be tucked into Michigan, that they didn't think they would maybe get the call from Michigan, or they didn't see this job opening up, and then Michigan reaches out, it's the same sort of thing. Maybe a little bit different. LSU seemed pretty keen on Lane Kiffin from the jump. And
we'll get into that too.
Okay, but my point is, like, when you have one guy who has a mentor to him that's been at LSU and is going to nudge him in that direction, LSU is pretty likely to land Lane. Mm-hmm. You know, Michigan, on the other hand, maybe you knew it was coming. If you don't have your guy that you feel really good about taking the job as being the next Michigan man, then you open yourself up to all sorts of questions of, yeah, this should be a really good college football job. This is a place that won a national championship not that long ago, two seasons ago. Now is when Michigan ended up winning it. It's a blue blood. It has the history. It has the tradition. It's in the Big Ten. It has money. It has access to talent, everything I could want. Except, do I trust the administration? Think about maybe, Jay, part of why Sharon Moore is able to get away with this. And again, I think you're onto something. They held it till it was convenient for them, which is their prerogative. I don't think it's the right way to do business, but it's what they did, so it's too late to say anything now. Michigan's president was also looking around. He got an interview at Florida, and then Florida ended up turning him down. Okay,
for the
president.
Right, Joe. Yeah.
Michigan's AD, Ward Manuel, let's not pretend like he's squeaky clean. Let's not pretend like he's interested in giving much oversight to an athletic department. I mean, look what happened toward the end of Juwan Howard's tenure. Ward Manuel just kind of sat back and watched it happen until Juwan went 8-24. And he said, yep, sorry, can't do this anymore. You're losing too much.
Right.
Michigan just doesn't seem to have that culture in place of self-policing. And so if I'm a coach that wants to come in and run a clean program, that's really up to me, but is it? Do I trust my bosses to support me in running the right kind of program? You know, do I still think that there are people of integrity in charge at Michigan that will have my back when I take the the hard way instead of the easy way. And Michigan will spin this as, well, hey, look at us. We're not the ones trying to sell our soul for a quick infusion of cash. Yeah, we have more integrity than all the rest of you. But that is a very flimsy leg to stand on after all the stuff that your men's basketball, your football program have been through really just in the last 3 years.
Their hockey team and what, was it gymnastics?
Something like that.
They've had it. And, you know, like no program is perfect. Obviously, we had some stuff going on while I was here and all that. But I think with Michigan, for a very long time, they've been able to kind of, I would say, bully or manipulate their way to the front of the line. And that's just how Michigan is, right? If you even go, I know for a fact that when, you know, the Heisman, when Charles Woodson won it, there was, you know, I wasn't going to go unless he was going to win it. I mean, I mean, the whole thing of when they decided that, you know, how long that they were going to suspend Jim Harbaugh, you know, when they were going to do it, you know what I'm saying? Kind of turn their nose up, you know, at the investigation, you know, leading people the wrong way. And so I think this is where you get to this endpoint right here with Michigan and when they want to do things, because now they're, you know, the names that you're hearing like Kalen DeBoer or Jed Fish. Okay. If I'm Kalen DeBoer, I mean, if you really want to get out of Bama that quick, you should have never went there.
I see. I'm curious. I'd love to pick Kalen DeBoer's brain, because the ESPN report was that he and his family like it in Tuscaloosa.
Right.
But if Alabama's going to run him out of town after a first round exit.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know that for sure. But at some point, you got to be able to read the tea leaves or have your agent working the phones behind the scenes just to see, because you don't just leave Alabama.
You don't just leave. You got a pretty good deal down there. You're still east. I think that Florida State game, I think it brought out a part of Kalen DeBoer. I think he's got some time to get the offense back together, and they'll play well against Oklahoma. They'll get healthier. You get what I'm saying? Because I think Simpson's hurt, obviously. And leave it for Michigan. It would just give me pause. Because, okay, let's just say he does go there. Ward Manuel's probably out on his way out. He might be like LSU's AD. You might not be allowed to pick the next guy. So he's gone. The guy that hired you probably going to be gone within a year or two. Who knows what the president's going to do?
And that's why the LSU situation is different. Because LSU targeted one guy. They targeted Lane. Michigan, when they have their search open and they're not linked directly to one candidate and guys have to weigh it,
this late,
that level of instability is going to cause more people to ask questions and make you look less desirable than LSU, who it seems like targeted Lane Kiffin early, and Lane Kiffin targeted them at least somewhat early in the process.
It was
going
on pretty after that Georgia game with Ole Miss.
Yeah.
That's where it really caught fire, if you know people down at Ole Miss, and I do. And this is why I think the crosshairs point right to Seattle, Washington, and Jed Fish. He's coached there. He has connection to Harbaugh. He's not involved in the Connor Stallions thing. He's definitely has, you know, impeccable, you know, reputation. He lives that way. I know Jed, you know, personally. That'd probably be the only way, that the only guy that you could do it. But I was saying, if you're, you know, Michigan holds themselves at a higher state than they actually are. And there are two national championships. The only people that celebrate their national championships are them.
Yeah,
they split with us. Nobody, no, you weren't better than us. Now, then the way that you just won this last one, you were the best team that year. But how'd you get there? So you always have these asterisks by what you do, right? Mm-hmm. And then you would like to think, if you knew about it before, a coach you didn't want, you knew that this Michigan team wasn't a national championship contender team, right? And you wanted to get ready your head coach. The perfect time would be, to be honest with you, after the Nebraska game or shortly after that. Right, maybe after you beat Michigan State or something like that.
Yeah,
you held on to him, and sure, it blew up. Now he's obviously, you know, after the fact of you firing him, his reaction, now that's at the forefront. But now on the back end, you're still at the same place that you were with even less, I guess, candidates for your job. And
who knows how many of those guys would have been legitimate candidates in Michigan? Like, was James Franklin going to jump from Penn State to Michigan?
You did, but you never know.
Probably not, but you never know. But I think your point, you handcuffed yourself.
Yeah. And a lot of people knew and heard some stuff, and that means obviously there's leakage in there with the people that knew the stuff, which is your Board of Regents. You guys have been telling people. But then you had the internal investigation. Probably was a slap, maybe like, hey, cut it off, maybe, which then you're then, so that's where you expose yourself if you try to say you fired him for cause. Well, you just told me, and then say you didn't do it or whatever. Sherrone Moore is going to try to, you know, escape on this or something. Now you're going to go try to poach a coach from Bama that's probably got a really good recruiting class, going to probably get a really good portal class. Say they beat Oklahoma, that door would be closed. Then you're trying to go and get Jed Fish. It seems like he had a really good recruiting class, right? And it's late in the game. Mm-hmm. So come the new year, January 2nd, if you don't have a coach, you're dead in the water. You better have Podgy come and just do a kind of a gap year.
Right.
That's your only saving grace. Mm-hmm. And then you're starting over again because majority of the players and the good players, and it might even be Underwood leaving this year, will leave. Because who knows if Underwood fits, in this case, DeBoer or Jed Fish, because his skill set is significantly different than the two quarterbacks that are playing for those coaches right now.
Much.
Probably more closer to Williams, but Williams is probably more polished passer. Underwood's probably a better runner.
But a different runner, right? Yeah. Underwood's more the power. Williams is more Lamar Jackson-like.
Right. But totally different skill sets.
Oh, much. Yeah. So Ty Simpson's your prototypical pocket guy.
So there goes your big-time recruit. And who goes with him?
And all now, his buddies.
And then what about the portal?
Yeah.
So as fast as they made the decision, sure. We got a text here, 6169. He thinks Brian Kelly is a fit for Michigan. No. When you read the tea leaves on why Brian Kelly was going to get potentially fired for cause in LSU, it's probably not the cause to hire him at Michigan.
It was football, but it wasn't.
Yeah. It was personal, and it wasn't a good fit. And then it was it was personal, but then it was obviously outside of it too.
Yeah.
So look, these are humans. There's no judging going on. I just think that Michigan it's a good look into a program that was sometimes you're so desperate for a national championship. To beat Ohio State and to dominate them, that you really get out over your skis and you just, everything's like on the table. Like you'll just do anything and everything. And that's where they're at right now.
I think that Brian Kelly needs Michigan much more than Michigan needs Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
He's accomplished enough that you can talk yourself into him being a fit. But the last thing that Michigan needs right now is another coach with scandal.
Yeah. Plain it's not, I just think that Brian Kelly is very abrasive.
They don't need more negative attention, right, whether it's scandal or just, you know, rubbing people the wrong way.
He would fit just like a coaching. If he gets a good coaching staff, I think he could probably come in there and do it. I just don't know how much damage, how many bridges he's burned based on what happened at LSU, or was it LSU getting tired of Brian Kelly and not meeting the expectations and having unrealistic expectations? I think the three losses that he had was like less than 20 points total, right? And you're playing
but in like one of the worst offenses in the SEC, at LSU, really?
Right. Yeah. You shouldn't with the quarterback and all that. Right. But you got
Nussmeier. We haven't talked enough about the fall off that he had.
But you got two freshmen starting at the offensive line that you have to start freshmen and play them early. And the offensive line is not where you want to put freshmen out there going against grown men in the SEC.
Sure.
It's a recipe for disaster. So it's going to be interesting to see. Now back to Lane. I'm going to tell you what, there's nobody happier than old Lane Kiffin down in Baton Rouge. All eyes off him.
Right.
He probably sent his Sherrone Moore text. Hey,
appreciate you having my back.
You want to be an analyst after the smoke clears? I got you. Right? I mean, you know, I'm just being dead serious. I mean,
Coach O didn't want to come back and coach offensive line. So you in?
Yeah, because, you know, everybody was digging on Lane on what, you know, what he was doing in Ole Miss and just how he left and all that. And obviously with the college football playoffs and Ole Miss about to play your home game, you know, that's going to fester up. It's now on, you know, come Friday, it's going to be Sherrone Moore. He's going to be arraigned in court and just go from there. And look, man, all the talk, you wish everybody the best, right? You want him to get the help if he needs it. And you want, you know, the families to heal. And then obviously more importantly, and not more importantly, or just as important, all the kids that committed to him. None of the kids that committed to Michigan and signed for Michigan had their signing day, had no idea. Now they're locked in because there's not really a lot of places to go because the allocation of scholarships are closed. Now, if you're a five-star kid, now you make room for guys, but not everybody that committed to Michigan will make room. Some guys will stay because they committed to the University of Michigan. There's some guys that committed to Sharon Moore and the staff.
So Michigan signed the number 11 class in the country. You have a five-star edge rusher, Carter Meadows, out of Gonzaga High in D.C. You have Savion Hyder out of Louise County in Virginia. Those are your two five stars. And you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 four stars in the class that ends up with 27 members.
Yeah.
27 in this day and age.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Normal class. Back in the day.
Yeah. So that's where also there's 27 kids that are affected. And you don't know if the new coach wants these, because I'm sure if I'm Jed Fish, can you look up the University of Washington where they're at? They had a really good class. I think even higher maybe than Michigan, or if not, they had a really good class for because I had a big time wide receiver flip.
So they're right next to each other. Washington ends up number 12 overall, right, with 25 signees and one five-star and Cody Green, offensive tackle from Modern Day.
And then they got a couple of wide receiver flips at the very last end, so or very last second. So I would want to bring some of those guys. So now I'm stripping guys out of Washington's program and probably ejecting guys out of the Michigan's program. There's a lot of indirectly or collateral damage, you know, from this decision. And yes, Sharon Moore, the reaction to him being fired is on him, right? And nobody knows that type of pressure until you're there. Nobody, you can say, oh, this is how I do this. Your world's crumbling. Who knows what's going on? Well, it's set up by Michigan knowing and being okay with it for a very long time.
Yeah.
And let's hope that they're like, well, Sharon Moore is hoping that they're do some digging and there was other people that they kind of swept underneath the rug. Well, then now you set the precedence that you're okay with it. Mm-hmm. Now, whatever happened at the house, you know, that's a legal case. This is a contract. It's going to get messy, and Michigan has been messy for quite some time. You thought the 2-game suspension, that was it. Connor Stallion, you really got a slap on the wrist. You got a national championship. Yeah. You got one of Harbaugh's guys in there. You kind of just been kind of, all right, I got away with it. Mm-hmm. You thought now it's just because they're going to dig that back up.
Right.
Because they're going to try to, you know, do a bad pattern of behavior like everybody's doing. So we'll see where it goes.
23-20, no way Moore gets a job of any kind in football again. have you paid attention to football?
Have you seen Bobby Petrino? I mean,
to be fair, Moore does have the Stallions allegations and now whatever this is.
Yeah.
But
I don't think
will he ever be a head coach again?
Doubt it.
Odds are slim. Will he be a position coach again? Almost assuredly.
Oh yeah.
Somewhere.
He'll get another chance, and that it might be some time, but I could tell you this.
He's not Book Richardson.
He's a very good offensive line coach. Very good line.
Yeah.
And also, obviously, he's recruiting like a mug. Anyways, I just got to bring a little bit of light to it. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Quick segment, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. A lot going on. Once again, we want to thank Kevin Meyer Corkenbottle coming in on Thirsty Thursday. It's always awesome for him when he comes in. Great drinks and a great libation, great knowledge, and obviously his presence is always felt. I think in a few days he's going to start his Christmas special over there at 13th and South, and they do a really good job. All the wines you can drink. Be jolly and drink them all. Then I want to thank Jason Peters and Keaton Peters coming in from the Lighthouse. We have an event next Tuesday, lighthouse.org, LincolnLighthouse.org. And then obviously you can donate there to the Christmas event that starts at 5:00 out at the North Walmart. But tonight, Austin, we got a little dirty South, Atlanta Falcons and Tampa Bay battling it out. Two teams that are spiraling downward. Thursday night games over the history have not been very competitive. The Buccaneers get Mike Evans back and McMillan back. Baker Mayfield is probably happy about that. He's got his arsenal back.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta has my man Kirk Cousins, who's been reluctantly sat on the shelf. This is probably going to be the best version of Kirk Cousins you could see, because now he's had a game underneath his belt, been able to practice and really go out there and show to his best abilities.
Really intriguing matchup. I have been a little less impressed with Tampa Bay. over the last month,
considering how they played last year.
Right. Yeah. They're still hanging on in the division technically, but they're tied with Carolina, who hasn't been very impressive, but that entire division, Jay, has a negative point differential.
Yeah.
I mean, the Panthers are in second place. They've been outscored by 50 points on the year. The Bucs offense has been fine. I mean, 299 points scored, not elite by any means, but good enough to get the job done, a little over 20 a game. The defense, on the other hand, is the worst in the division. They've allowed 325 points. So if you are Tampa Bay, you like to think that getting those offensive weapons back will help you keep up in some of these shootouts. Mm. They won in some kind of crazy fashion early on, the early season winning streak. And sometimes that's sustainable. Usually it's not, especially when you succumb to the injuries that Tampa Bay has. But if you look at, you know, the Falcons and the Saints already being eliminated from playoff contention, you trust Tampa Bay to figure out a way to win the division and sneak into the playoffs and take your chances with them having been there before. But maybe there's something to Carolina. Maybe they see that, hey, we can play spoiler. And, you know, Atlanta can help Carolina out in that sense by stealing one from Tampa Bay, giving Carolina, you know, a half game advantage heading into the weekend. I still like Tampa Bay. I think there's enough good pieces there, and I trust them to figure it out. But just had a bunch of just weird hiccups for them this year, mostly because of the injuries.
Yeah, it's just interesting when you look at it just over the last few games. I mean, they lose that, I wouldn't say a heartbreaker to the Patriots, but, you know, that's where the Trayvon Henderson had all the big runs, right? That was the Patriots, like, coming out party. Then the Bills just beat the brakes off them, it was only by 12.
A lot in an NFL.
Yeah, it is a lot by the NFL. And then you get trounced by the Rams, right? So that's a three-game skid. You're able to barely beat the Cardinals, and that's without Pocket Hercules. And then you lose to the Saints just last week, and now you got to tee it up again tonight.
I'm going to unveil this. Kyler Murray is NFL Trae Young.
Yeah. I think Trae Young's probably more productive. Actually, Trae Young's probably a better basketball player than Kyler Murray has been, but I think Kyler Murray, I'm going to tell you this, and they're both the same, and you're 100% right. Trae Young has heard the noise. He's actually a better leader and a better teammate now, as far as he assists the ball better. He doesn't get credit for it.
Oh, he's been an elite passer since he set foot in the league.
But now he's actually, you know, his efficiency rating's up and everything. He's playing a little bit better defense now. Size just... You get matched up against Kevin Durant, don't matter. Remember when he tapped him on the head?
Right.
But then Kyler Murray, right? He had that thing with Cliff Kingsbury, flat out disrespectful to his coach. And then new coach come in last year, he started to take off. This year, he was doing pretty decent. He wasn't probably getting Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball, but he was pretty good. So I think they both have changed their game for the better, maybe backed into a corner, but they are the same. Came in, both of them, undersized for respective sports, exceeded expectations, a lot of hype, oddly enough.
And as good as they are.
Didn't they go to the same high school or same college? Oklahoma, right?
Oklahoma, yeah. Now, Kyler didn't start there, but.
Yeah.
And Trey was only there for a year, but yeah, they both.
At one point in time.
Yes.
Yeah. It's in their blood.
As much as college Trae Young was really fun, but because Trae Young happened, we forget how fun Buddy Hield was in Oklahoma. Do you remember?
Oh, he was
Oklahoma Buddy. Hield
was the modern day. He was the modern day version of Chuck the Rifleman person.
Gosh,
from deep too.
Deep,
yeah.
That game against Kansas, he had the triple overtime or double overtime one. Oh,
and quiet as kept it. When he's in the league, he's shot the ball pretty decent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Oklahoma on the sneak is, you know, you had Blake Griffin, you had the Griffin brothers, and obviously Trae Young, and then Buddy Hield, you had some other guys as well. And so.
Well, they had that Final Four team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're tough. Mm-hmm. I like their coach, too. Obviously, they, you know, were able to, you know, lose to Nebraska, which always good. But
they did the right thing.
They did the right thing.
And they were really bad in football in the 90s. So,
yeah.
Also good for we'll take that.
without him, without us beating the brakes off him and John Blake doesn't come to Nebraska, and we don't get Ndamukong Suh the House of Spears. So you just. Never know when it can come back to you. I think the Bucs prevail. They need to get back and get right. They need to get out of this cardiac kid version of the Bucs and get back to dominating, because it's playoff time for them. And it's going to be interesting to see the mindset and temperament of Baker Mayfield. I think he was going to try to show out tonight.
This is where Baker's at his best, right? Back a little bit into a corner and a huge stretch. Host the Falcons, get the Panthers twice, and at the Dolphins. to end the year. It's on the table.
On the table for him. Yeah. And the narrative would change. The feelings would change. And it's right for the picking because Philly is spiraling. Now, you got to deal with the Rams, but you like your chance the second time around. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman, another great Thursday. We'll holler at you tomorrow.